everyone. This is Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan, and this is Project Camelot Whistleblower Radio. And Bill, are you there?
I am right here, and it's very nice to rejoin the show. Last week we were working pretty hard on the Zurich conference, and I have a confession to make. I haven't even listened to last week's two shows. Things have been so crazy in all kinds of ways. How do you want to take this, Kerry, in terms of everything that's happening in the next 2 hours? Do you want to tell our listeners what we have in store?
We are having Jane Burgermeister on with us. She'll be joining us in right after the 5 minute break, so that's very shortly. And then we've also invited Dr. John Waterman, who I interviewed late at night a couple days ago, about the whole vaccination, forced vaccine sort of effort on the part of the powers that be. And so Dr. John Waterman has some excellent information about why you don't need to get a vaccine and what you can get instead, and a possible plot that is it at work to keep homeopathic medicine from really doing the things that it could do for humanity. So it's going to be a very exciting show. But Bill, why don't you talk a little bit about what happened at the conference? I know Henry Deacon did go, and he actually went with the help of myself and two other people who were behind the scenes helping him in amazing ways. And I don't know, I think it'd probably be all right to name names here. Actually, there were three people altogether.
Okay, I've got 3 minutes to talk about the Zurich conference, actually.
Okay, why don't you go ahead then?
Before Jane comes on. And at the Zurich conference, it was a wonderful event. A lot of people listening to this will already know about that. We're going to report back in much greater detail when we're able to release the audio and the video. We had David Wilcock, myself, we had Dr. Brian O'Leary, and Dan Beerish and Marcy McDowell. And there was a panel discussion on the Saturday evening, and I was moderating this panel, and I made the mistake of picking up a grenade with a pin out, and this was in the form of a question asking the panel what their opinion was about the possibility of forced vaccinations. And I deferred immediately to Dan as the resident microbiologist, and the last word I had heard from Dan Beerish about this was that he had said in an email to us, which we reported on the site, that the H1N1 situation was, quote, suspicious. Now, what happened was that Dan basically misunderstood the question, and Dan talked as a microbiologist about the microbiology issue of vaccines and defended the idea that vaccines were an effective way of, in his words, conferring immunity. And the problem was that the audience who were there, or a number of people in the audience who felt about this issue very passionately, weren't so interested in the theoretical science of vaccines, but they were concerned about the ethics and intentions of whoever it was who had, so to speak, the needle in their hand, be that the government or be that your local friendly doctor. And so Dan answered
Bill,
one question.
Why don't we pick this up? We've got the music starting here. Let's pick this up on the other side of this break.
That's fine. Bill Ryan here, Whistleblower Radio, with Kerry Cassidy, and any minute now we're just going to be talking to Jane Burgermeister. Jane, I'd like to ask you, are you there?
I'm Bill. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Jane, it's a great pleasure to have you on our show. It's very, very timely for reasons that I was just in the middle of explaining. If I can just take a minute, Jane, just to explain a sort of setup for this, as it were, that happened at our conference in Zurich this Saturday evening. And what I was saying, for anyone who's just tuned in here, was that on the Saturday evening of the conference, there was a panel discussion. And on that panel was Dr. Dan Beerish, microbiologist. And I made the mistake as a panel moderator, and I say this sort of as a joke, but I made the mistake of picking up this piece of paper that was a written question asking about the panel's views on forced vaccinations. And Dan answered the question from the theoretical perspective of a microbiologist arguing for the general theoretical efficacy of vaccines as a way of conferring immunity. However, the intention of the question was not so much about whether vaccines worked or not, but it was about the intentions of those who would like to recommend and sell the idea to us that we do take vaccines for our own protection in the face of whatever may be coming at us this year or next. And as Dan apparently did not answer the question and seemed in some people's perception to be recommending vaccines, very much as from the standpoint of a theoretical lab-based scientist, some people in the audience got pretty agitated, and I think it would be fair to say that there was quite a lot of passion expressed. Now, this was healthy passion, and what it showed me very, very clearly was that there is a huge amount of concern. There's a amount of concern in our room, and there's a amount of concern all over the internet about what games, tricks, and propaganda may be being played on us, trying to persuade us that vaccines are the way to go, trying to persuade us that we're under threat, trying to push us into fear, and that we have to defer to authorities to handle our health issues for us. And given that we had arranged for you to be on our show, and we're delighted you're here, last week, I think, or even the week before, it's one of these wonderful timely synchronicities that of all the people who it's appropriate for us to talk to about a number of wide-ranging issues, you are perfectly here right now. And isn't this the way the universe works sometimes?
Actually, I have to say that the universe had something to do with it, but I had the foresight to invite her, so you can thank me, Bill.
But I thank you, Kerry, as part of the universe that's working perfectly.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and we should give an introduction for Jane.
So, why don't you go ahead, Kerry? That was my introduction. That was my bridge over into how come it's so appropriate that Jane is with us here this evening.
Okay. Jane, briefly, is an Austrian journalist. She filed criminal charges against the World Health Organization, the United Nations, and several high-ranking government and corporate officials concerning what she is considering bioterrorism. And she filed the charges with the FBI, and I guess she was also fired from her job as a European correspondent to the Renewable Energy World website, it looks like. So, Jane, maybe you can take it from there.
Yes, can I just say I'm actually an Irish national. I have an Irish passport. My mother was Irish, so
wonderful.
I just wanted to make that clear. But my dad is Austrian, and I live in Austria. Yes, if I can just wind back a little bit to what Bill was saying, he spotlighted or threw the spotlight on the issue of the intent behind these vaccinations. And this is really the focus of my various criminal charges, and they started in April in Austria. I filed charges at the state prosecutor here in Vienna, and the police are investigating Baxter because Baxter was involved in activities that clearly showed a criminal intent. They were caught contaminating 72 kilos of vaccine material with live bird flu virus, a virus that was incidentally supplied by WHO, and then distributing it with a false label to 16 laboratories in 4 countries. And if it had not been caught by a lab technician in the Czech Republic, it would have sparked a pandemic. So the criminal intent of Baxter is, I think, quite clearly established by the facts, indeed, in the public domain. All I did was put them together. And that is why I think people are rightly concerned about this whole move by companies like Baxter, who have a huge influence on WHO and the World Health Organization, to force entire populations around the world to take these very vaccinations. And in advance, they have given themselves sort of immunity and all kinds of measures that mean that they will not really be responsible for the damage that they cause to people. And this is also a reason why people are concerned. If they were acting in good faith, you would think that they would have not gone to the trouble of removing these clauses that make them liable for damages and so on. But they have. If you look at the legal setup, these sort of protections have been hollowed out. And incidentally, WHO is in a position to acquire more or less control of all the national governments in the event of a pandemic being declared. So the big winners are WHO and Baxter and the other vaccine companies. And it was exactly this pair, WHO and Baxter, who were involved in Austria in nearly triggering a terrible pandemic in February. And this can be proven, and that's why the police are investigating. So I think people are very, very rightly concerned about whether this isn't, in fact, a big criminal enterprise at work being covered by the mainstream media, the corporate media, who is in the control of the same people who control the vaccine companies and who fund WHO.
Okay, well, that's a great summary, Jane. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how you got involved in this whole story.
Well, it was just one of those, you were talking about the coincidences of the universe, but basically, Baxter, when it sent out this contaminated material, it sent it to a laboratory in the district in Vienna where I actually live. And in the local paper, there was a report about it because it wasn't reported in the mainstream media at all. There was almost total silence. But in the local paper, there's a little bit of a snippet about how the people who were working for that laboratory had to go to hospital to be treated preventatively for the bird flu. So it was clearly, because I've worked as a medical journalist with BMJ and Reuters Health and so on, I knew that this was a terribly significant event, and I realized that there should be an investigation or criminal charges being brought against Baxter at the very least for this, and nothing was being done. And after my neighbor kind of showed me this report, I began looking into it, and I saw that it was deliberately done, that these are high biosecurity level 3 facilities that Baxter has in Orten, the Donau, which mean that you cannot accidentally mix this kind of material together and send it out irradiated. So I decided then, as a desperate measure, really, to file criminal charges. I couldn't get it through the media. The mainstream media is very controlled. I know that anyway. But I gave it a shot. I sent the story to the BMJ. They refused it. Lancet didn't get back to me. And so I saw no option except to try and file criminal charges to compel the authorities to investigate and identify the people who were responsible. And I did that in April against Baxter and Avier. And the police are investigating. I was summoned actually to the anti-terrorism unit here in Austria for an interview a couple of weeks ago, and I presented even more evidence incriminating Baxter and Avier. And as I continue to do this research, I realize that Baxter is just one element in this huge organized crime syndicate, which WHO seems to play this sort of controlling role. Novartis, Sanofi, Pasteur, and so other are just other elements. And that's why I expanded the charges and filed a new set of charges with the FBI at the embassy of Vienna. And I believe in the meantime, people in America have kind of filed the same charges at their local police station and contacted their FBI to try and put pressure on the authorities to really investigate, you know, what's going on here.
What kind of progress do you feel you've made, Jane? And what was the, the leading question here, what repercussions have you experienced since starting to take this action?
Well, obviously, I feel there has been tremendous progress made. People are now aware of the problem. The word has spread like wildfire, and the spotlight has been turned on the activities of WHO and Baxter. People are aware that there could be forced immunization in America and other countries in a very short time, that this could have all kinds of dangers, and they have to prepare for that now. So I feel there's been tremendous progress. And, of course, the police are investigating here. They haven't arrested anybody, but it's a very powerful organization, and I think they're a little bit kind of wary about tackling Baxter. So that's the plus side of it. Obviously, it was, you know, rather unpleasant to be fired from my job as a result of this, but I did kind of half expect it, you know. And as far as I can see, my life is as much in danger as anybody else's from this whole plan that is unraveling or unrolling before our very eyes. Because even here in Austria, people can be, theoretically, I believe, compelled to take the vaccination if who orders it in the event of a pandemic emergency. And even if you don't take the vaccination, the very act of vaccinating people will allow a more lethal mutation to emerge, which will then also affect people all around the world. So I'm also acting in self-defense. It's not just for other people. I'm also acting in my own defense.
What was the reason given to you, Jane, for being fired? What did they actually say?
Well, there was no reason given. I had my next couple of reports lined up, and suddenly I just got an email saying that they did not want me to continue with these reports. There was no reason given for it. I've been kind of working there for 2 years. I even won an award for my report from Renewable Energy World. So I can only assume that it is on the orders of Penwell, which bought up the magazine after I started working there. And this is a kind of magazine publishing company of the oil and military industrial complex. And obviously they realized that this kind of a campaign needs a certain amount of financial means. And if they can destroy the financial basis of your campaign, they can put a spoke in the wheel of it, and so I assume that's what they intend to do.
Well, that was very courageous of you, Jane. I have to say, considering you also seem to be well aware that you may be fired for taking the actions you did, and yet you went ahead. So I do want to commend you for that, and Camelot commends you. What is going on as far as what you're hearing? Because we're hearing things, and we just put something on our site. I just got an insider in Norway saying that Norway has decided to have forced vaccinations. And I also heard someone else who told me that Israel was deciding to do forced vaccinations. Are you hearing about these things?
Well, I took a closer look at the World Health Organization and their laws, and it seems that they really do have the power to compel all 194 signatory countries to have forced vaccinations. Their international health regulations and the WHO pandemic plan revised in April 2009 gives them the power to do this in the event of a pandemic emergency, which will be the case in autumn, because the second wave of the so-called swine flu is going to be much more lethal, and it really will unleash panic. You know, and this panic will be stoked by the media. And in this situation, who has got the authority to force the countries to implement forced vaccination? So this is a real legal situation. I think it'll depend on the individual countries whether they dare go ahead with that or not. I think the French government will not dare try and force the French, for example, to take the vaccination.
People in France.
A lot of hysteria. Yep.
So you're saying that WHO has control over governments, or is it the sort of thing where the WHO asks the government to do enforced vaccinations and the government either accepts or rejects the idea?
My understanding is that WHO has acquired the power to compel governments to do this, and it has these, can issue so-called temporary recommendations in the event of an emergency. And these temporary recommendations are actually binding. And as part of this new set of criminal charges that I'm just about to file in Austria against the health minister for his role in the cover-up, I had to look at Austria's pandemic plan, and it's really quite frightening. It basically creates a special crisis committee that takes over the power of the national government. The national government is dissolved in a pandemic emergency. A special crisis committee is created, which is makes all the decisions, key decisions about what the health authorities do and the security forces do in the event of an emergency. And this authority is located in the Ministry of Interior, and it takes its orders from WHO and the EU. And I looked at the pandemic plans of other countries in Europe, and they all seem to be more or less the same operating sort of procedure in all of them. There's a special crisis committee will be created in every country. They will have emergency powers that supplant the national governments and ministries, and they will have the capacity to make legislation and policies and enforce them and use the security forces to carry through these policies. So this is a real danger, and that people are not aware of, because the media has not focused on this side of the legislative side. In the US, of course, it's exactly the same. In the event of a pandemic emergency, WHO also takes control of key U.S. health and security infrastructure, I think Homeland Security and so on, and together with the UN. So basically what we have in place is a perfect operation to take over the world. On the one hand, you have WHO and the UN, the EU, assuming control of all the national governments in the pandemic emergency. On the other hand, you have their allies or co-conspirators, the vaccine companies, giving people around the world simultaneously under force what is almost certainly a very toxic virus vaccine or injection against a virus that actually looks like WHO itself helped create and release. So it looks to me like we've just kind of found the new world order and caught them red-handed carrying out their population agenda. Now we know how they intended to do it. I think the structure is now being revealed.
Right, the writing is on the wall.
Thank you so much. I have a number of questions which I want to ask you after the break, which I think is coming up imminently. The first one of those, this is Bill Ryan and Kerry Cassidy on Whistleblower Radio, and we're talking with Jane Burgermeister tonight. Kerry, that was wonderful music. Was that your choice?
Yes. Beyond Thunderdome. That's from our demo, in case you don't recognize it. If you
absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Very appropriate. Jane, I had a question fired up for you here, which I think a lot of people want to hear the answer to, and I do too. And we've got a good 15 or 16 minutes before the next break in order to do this justice. And that is that this threat, which we are apparently being led to believe is real, which may result in a response from the authorities concerning forced vaccination, which you've just been discussing. Is this threat real, or is it being hyped, Jane?
Well, it's a real threat. They have released into the environment an artificial virus which really will mutate and become more lethal. However, if they vaccinate, then of course by injecting toxins into people, it will become, they can kill billions of people. If the virus mutates, it will kill millions anyway, unless really proper measures are taken. Local authorities are given colloidal silver, sensible public health measures are taken. This virus will kill many, many people as it mutates, as the Spanish flu virus did, and it's reconstructed in a laboratory from this flu. So what they hope is to use what will be a real threat emerging in autumn, of course, to push people into taking the vaccine. And the vaccine is going to be what is going to kill billions. I mean, I think their plan is to kill sort of 5 billion of us or whatever. And they can only accomplish this by injecting it directly into our bloodstream, these toxins, and by hoping that more and more lethal mutations will arise, because who knows what they'll be putting in these vaccines. They could be putting horse virus, bird flu virus. They could be releasing all kinds of bacteria and viruses in chemtrails. They could just, you know, have an absolute assault on us all. So they have already put into the world a very dangerous virus, and they will use that as a pretext to make it far, far worse.
So what you're saying really is that we have a choice between taking responsibility ourselves to handle a serious problem that has probably been engineered to be a problem. And in the phrase that David Icke has popularized, problem, reaction, solution, that this problem they've created, which is a real problem, that we're all meant to be driven down into fear, probably with the assistance of the media, and then the solution is actually just going to accelerate the problem, because it's going to increase the viral mass, introduce more agents which are going to cause recombination at a faster speed, and that this is the way that they're going to handle the population problem, and they're going to do it to us this year. This is my summary, which is actually a question. Have I understood that right?
That's what I believe, yes. That's how I think that's how they intend to do it. They have created a real problem, and they're offering what is an apparent solution, but in fact it is a bioweapon with which they intend to inject people, and I believe that is the way they intend to carry out their population agenda. Simultaneously, in all the countries in the world, in a state of panic and hysteria whipped up by the media, people will be taking the injections. There will be several injections, as far as I understand, and then there will be enormous numbers of deaths, and this will be put down by the media to this virus that is going around anyway, and the vaccine isn't even strong enough to kind of stop it. So there'll be a complete confusion and mayhem and uncertainty in autumn unless we deal with these people in the next few weeks and get our injunctions through, stop the vaccines from being issued, and ensure that local authorities take sensible measures such as stocking up on colloidal silver and proper face masks and that kind of thing.
So the deaths, in your view, are likely to be used to further justify the mandatory vaccination program rather than allowing anyone to point out the fact that the vaccines are actually making it worse.
That's right. That's absolutely the situation. You know, they need to have an excuse to inject everybody with this bioweapon, and they need to have a plausible reason or a feasible reason why suddenly all around us everybody will be dropping dead or kind of getting ill. And so this will be the alleged virus that is mutating and becoming more lethal and becoming so lethal that no vaccine can stop it. And hurry to your hospital immediately to get your vaccine, because if you hurry today, you might just be able to kind of stop the lethal effects of this virus. But it'll be the vaccine. It'll be the injection that actually most likely will kill you.
And if people resist and just say, you know what, I'm not going to do this, I refuse to allow this violation of my own body space, what do you think is likely to happen next?
Well, I'm not sure what the legal position is in countries, whether you're even entitled to say that. I think in the USA you might not be entitled to say it. In Switzerland, for example, you might not be entitled to decline your jab. As far as I know, if government or the local authorities forces people to take it, everybody will simply get a ring or a call from the police, and they'll be told to appear at a certain spot, a certain medical center, and there will be no exceptions or excuses allowed. And if you refuse, and this is Switzerland, you'll be carted off to jail or put in quarantine. So They really are looking at a situation where you either take the virus or you have to face quarantine, jail, or police force. You could be forcibly injected with this bioweapon. At least that's the situation potentially in countries like Switzerland and the USA. So I think what we have to do now is use whatever time is available to us to dismantle or disable this whole legislative framework and to isolate the people who are responsible for this and put them in jail. And I think we can start with the Baxter executives and the, you know, Novartis executives, and we can start with who is implicated in kind of this whole crime gang. And
excuse me, Jane, I am wondering about that, because you did file charges, from what I understand, with the FBI, and do you really think that that is going to have any impact? In other words, when I saw that, you know, I thought that it was a strikingly courageous move, but I wasn't sure that it would be an effective move. It's more of a, you know, it's more of an attack in the sort of sphere of public opinion, it seems to me. But I'm just wondering what your thoughts were about your own action there.
Well, primarily, I mean, I did try and do it as a practical measure, because it's true the FBI might not investigate, but they're obliged to investigate. That is their job. And if they do not investigate, they can be accused of negligence, abuse of office, whatever. And this is the mechanism of the law, is such that the various functionaries who occupy these positions are actually obliged to do their job. And if somebody comes along with this wad of evidence suggesting a bioterrorism attack on the USA, then they actually have to do it, or they expose themselves to the charge of negligence. That was one point. And the other point was that I wanted, and I hope that every agent or policeman who reads these charges will realize, that they themselves will be affected by these mandatory vaccinations. And if they kind of read them and study them and realize that the whole of the USA could pass over into the hands of WHO and the UN in a very short amount of time, then they might well find the motivation to investigate, which they might not have under other kind of circumstances, because it'll be them and their families and their future which is in jeopardy through this plan.
And absolutely.
Yes, and the other thing is, people have been kind of handing in these same documents around America and police stations and so on, and the aim is to try and get the local police to read the evidence and consider the evidence and recognize that they are also in danger. And the hope is that these law enforcement will be less willing to cooperate with Homeland Security and whatever when autumn comes or fall comes, and people are going to be or compelled to take this vaccination. And Elizabeth Book handed in these charges at her police station in Florida, and she emailed and said at first they kind of laughed at her, but it's now transpired they've been passed on to the Criminal Investigation Department. So probably at least 5 or 6 policemen have read them, and they're probably talking to their colleagues about it and their family members about it. And so they will be policemen who will be far less likely to go along with any order to, you know, force people to take this vaccination.
Have you thought forward into the future at all in terms of what's coming around the corner, I believe, after the first of the year, which is Codex, and how that sort of dovetails in with this whole forced vaccination program? But that's one part of my question. The other part is, what happens if the vaccines and if people, you know, actually prevent people from dying right off the bat, but as actually what may be the, you know, and I think, I guess, in a more diabolical way, simply because I'm Project Camelot, but I'm thinking that it's possible that some of this may be a lot slower acting than we realize. In other words, that people that are vaccinated may be eventually find themselves coming down with something else entirely, and that this is a rollout that may go on over several years, an overall weakening of populations, and also a weakening of the will of populations, so that it seems to me that it may be something a lot more diabolical and less short-term. Have you thought of that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think if they really want to reduce the population by this huge amount, that they will have to do it over a period of years, and they can try and, you know, kill as many people as possible in the first kind of wave, but there will be many who survive, and they will then kind of be exposed to all kinds of new dangers like the Codex, and wars and all kinds of other poisons. So I agree with you 100% that this is just the beginning of what I believe is a sustained assault on humanity that is designed to take place over the next few years. Yes, and indeed the vaccines that people are going to be given are in two doses, and the first dose will simply weaken the immune system and make people much more vulnerable to the second dose, which will load people with a virus and toxic metals. So they are planning a kind of sustained assault on us, and not to mention the food supplies. I think that there are a lot of farmers, for example, who haven't had the money or whatever to plant their kind of crops, and so there's going to be a shortage of food as well in the world. Coming up, there's an economic collapse coming up, a severe economic collapse coming to Europe, especially to Germany. So there will be states potentially going bankrupt, unable to pay pensions and whatever. There could be starvation, and they have in place the same old recipe of, you know, kind of far-right figures emerging to start conflicts and start wars. So I think we're in for a roller coaster, and unless we isolate these people and put them in jail soon, we're in real trouble. And many people have criticized my charges, saying, you know, why have you named all these key figures? But I don't see the choice that we have. We either have to kind of isolate them and put them in jail now, or face a whole barrage of assaults which are being, you know, this core group has prepared for us.
This is a very dark scenario that you're sketching out here, Jane. We're just about to go to a break in a few seconds' time. I'm having a little trouble hearing the music, so if I get cut off, I apologize. When we come back in 2 or 3 minutes' time, I'd like to ask you, have you had evidence of people who are on the inside who are quietly supporting you from their positions of authority? This is Bill Ryan and Kerry Cassidy on Whistleblower Radio. And just as I predicted, we were ambushed by the music that we could not hear. And so we're here with Jane Burgermeister, who's telling us what could be one of the most important stories we'll ever hear. I have to say that I'm mighty impressed with her testimony. I think this woman is a real hero, and I hope that she is wrong. And
so do I.
I mean, don't we all, you know? But what I was saying just before the commercials, and let me repeat my question here. I wondered if you had been contacted by people from the inside, either overtly or subtly, giving you indications about whether or not there is any support for your actions from insiders. And we at Camelot, we do have good reason to believe that there are what we call white hats on the inside who are hanging on, trying to change things from within, rather than doing the kind of job that we are doing here on the outside of the structures of authority. And have you had any whistleblowers contacting you with inside information that has been valuable to you?
Well, I have had confirmation conveyed to me in emails via third parties by top doctors who are involved in this whole pandemic, sort of, you know, swine flu hysteria or whatever, saying, applauding my charges and saying I'm on the right track, unfortunately, and saying that this really is a bioterrorism attack against the world, and that who really is behind this. And these are people who don't want to go on record, and so I won't give details because I don't want to get them into trouble. But I have had that confirmation. Also, a Canadian doctor, Ghislaine Langteau, I'm not sure how I should say her name, so I hope she forgives me if she's listening, has gone on record to say that she believes that this is, this virus and injection are part of a eugenics and population reduction program. She was actually struck off the register in Canada because she became very critical of the medical establishment and of vaccinations. And this is the way people are usually dealt with by this group. If you kind of dissent, you're simply fired or struck off or whatever. So,
I want to tell everyone listening that if you go to Project Camelot, .org, and you go down to our blog, you can click on where we say Jane Burgermeister's name, and you will find the article as one of the first articles on the list of articles there with about the Canadian doctor who has come out in support of what Jane is saying. So she is a very courageous doctor herself. And, of course, we did an interview with Dr. John Waterman. I don't know, Jane, if you got a chance to hear that interview. It was just recently. It was very impromptu. And I am bringing Dr. John Waterman on the line with us at 12:15, that's 12:15 Pacific time, and heaven knows, I guess I don't know what time that will be for you, maybe something like 9:15 p.m. or something.
About 20 minutes time.
Yes, and so he will be joining us. He is another doctor who has put himself and his reputation on the line by coming out against the vaccines, forced vaccines, and he also has a great deal of information about homeopathic remedy that is basically, you know, a lot better way to combat things like this this virus, even if it is man-made. Are you familiar with Dr. John Waterman at all?
I'm afraid I'm not. I wasn't aware of that. I've been very busy getting the next set of charges ready, and I'm afraid I missed that.
Right. That will be of great interest to you, and yes. When he joins us, I've asked him to join us purposely so the two of you could have a conversation, and Bill and I will just sit back and listen when that happens, because it should be really fascinating. And feel free to ask him any questions that you feel might help you in your sort of quest here. And see if perhaps he can help you with what you've set out upon. And certainly we are supporting you. And we do want to say that Dan Burish is now agreed. We put it on our website, but he is now going to look deeply into this subject. And that's another person that we would love to have you get in contact with. And we will be glad to do the introductions so that he is a microbiologist, in case you're not familiar with Dan Burish, and he is also involved tangentially at the moment, although he used to be deeply involved with the military and what was known as MJ-12 or the Committee of the Majority. He's still involved with them, and so that if he can be brought over to this way of thinking, he would be a great white hat to have on board.
Great.
Let me ask you, Jane, and this question or this answer may also get cut off. We've only got another minute or so. If we are able to escape the mandatory vaccination program by some form of legitimate non-cooperation, but there is a real threat out there, what self-defense measures would you advocate from your own knowledge of the threat if it is real?
Well, I think if we are not forced into these vaccinations, we could come off relatively lightly. There will be deaths, but it will be not on the scale that will really force the collapse of civilization. And my understanding is that colloidal silver is a wonderful method of killing any virus or bacteria. It seems to be
absolutely.
By NASA.
We're going to break here. We'll be right back.
It seems like it's been clear. our country is experiencing the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression, stocks and real estate have lost as much as 50% of their value and are still dropping. Most individuals have lost on average 50% of their life savings. Our government is desperately trying to bail us out by printing trillions in dollars, forcing the devaluation of our currency. In these troubled economic times, you should own gold. Gold offers diversification and safety from a depreciating dollar. Your company for gold is M&M Investment Group. Call M&M Investment Group today at 866-995-3301 and ask them how you can acquire gold today shipped directly to you. That's physical gold that you can hold in your hand, not some paper promise. Don't wait to get this valuable information. You owe it to yourself to call M&M Investment Group now at 866-995-3301. That's 866-995-3301 or log on to www.mnminvestmentgroup.com.
Heart-related health problems affect millions of people each year. Maybe you're one of the many who suffer from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeat, or clogged arteries. There is a solution that doesn't involve expensive prescription drugs that only mask the problem and leave you with horrible side effects. If you are ready to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then you're ready for Heart and Body Extract from Healthy Hearts Club. Heart and Body Extract has a 23-year proven track record of using certified organic herbs that make up an excellent formula to balance and support the heart and circulatory system. In as little as 2 weeks, you can feel amazing results when your 2-month supply of Heart and Body Extract today. Call 1-866-295-5305 or go to hbextract.com.
Don't miss Deadline Live with Jack Blood, weekday afternoons from 3 to 5, only on Freedom Underground Radio.
You never take control.
Prepare your mind to experience American Freedom Radio.
I want it!
Rance Radio with Jeff Rance. Deadline Live with Jack Blood.
The Truth Brigade. Truth Jihad Radio.
Liberty Cafe,
Weird Radio, Russell Dowden, and so much more.
American Freedom Radio.
I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough.
This is Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan and Project Camelot Whistleblower Radio, and we were letting the music play there. So I guess we really want to cover what possible positive measures, Jane, you have in mind, and I assume you're still with us there. Hello?
Hello? Hello.
Hi, Jane. What you were talking about colloidal silver right before the break, and we were wondering if you could elaborate on some of the methods of protection that you are familiar with.
Sure. I mean, I have a degree of it in English. I should just preface that and just explain that I'm only just saying what other doctors and people have told me. But colloidal silver seems to be very powerful tool for killing any bacteria or virus or germ. It apparently sucks the oxygen out of them within 6 minutes or whatever. My understanding is that these viruses attack the lung and they can enter through your mouth or your nose or your eyes, and you have to spray drops into your nose and your eyes to kill any germs there, as well as inhaling it. And also drinking it to make sure that it, in case it goes down to the intestines, I heard that there are cases of that, killing all the germs or viruses before they reach the lung, I think is the thing that's required, and strengthening your immune system by taking vitamin supplements and mineral supplements, and generally kind of being, you know, disinfecting the surfaces you come in contact with. making sure you wash your hands regularly, sort of for at least 15 minutes under hot water, staying at a certain distance away from people, and wearing the face mask at those periods when the virus is particularly infectious. So that's kind of, you know, what I'm aware of. You really need to talk to people like Dr. Carley to get a full rundown on that, or indeed Dr. Waterman. He would be able to tell you much more than myself.
And he will be joining us shortly here, and we'll ask him the same question. Are you aware, I mean, what is the amount of, sort of the number of deaths, and do you think perhaps it's being sort of inflated at this time? Because my understanding initially is that people were not really dying of this virus.
Yes, I believe it comes in three waves. And the Spanish flu, the first wave, was also very mild, and nobody kind of died of it. It's the second wave, when the virus has kind of mutated, that people start dying. And this is the wave that will soon be starting in the USA, which is kind of ahead of Europe. And then there will be a third wave. So unfortunately, this current wave is not going to be an accurate way of forecasting what's going to happen in the second wave. The second wave is going to be much more lethal. The virus is designed to mutate to become more lethal, like the Spanish flu. So in October, September, we should see this lethal virus emerging, and people will unfortunately be dying as a result of it, particularly if the authorities are taking all the wrong measures and steps, as they are doing at the moment.
Can I ask you where you've gotten the information in regard to the fact that it's going to become lethal in, what, as you say, in the fall? Was it some whistleblowing doctors that have given you that information, or is there some other source?
Well, Alexander Jones, Dr. Carley, I think it's quite well known that there are three waves for a pandemic. This is the
first one. Oh, I see. Okay. I'm sorry. The music has started again. We'll be right back.
Right.
Okay, we're back. This is Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan, Project Camelot, Whistleblower Radio. We are on the air with Jane Burgermeister. And she is an extremely courageous woman, I have to say. And we're going to be joined by Dr. John Waterman, I think, very shortly. John, are you with us?
Yes.
Oh, great, John. That's fabulous. I'm going to just do a brief introduction here. Jane Burgermeister, this is Dr. John Waterman, and he can actually give you some of his background. I think that would help. But we brought him on because we felt that the things he's doing, putting himself on the line here in the United States, would really resonate with you, and perhaps the two of you working together can kind of compare notes on what's really going on behind the scenes here. So, John, why don't you tell Jane Burgermeister a little bit about yourself, because she wasn't able to listen to our recent interview.
Hello, Jane.
Hi, John.
Well, they haven't got a chance, you know. They've got the Irish, and they've got a lot of experience fighting the wee little people, you know. Sneaky wee little people. And then, I'm Scottish, Jane, so we're cousins. That'll work.
Okay. They've had it. They've had it, John.
And I'm Irish, and Bill is Irish and Scottish, I think, as well. So there you go. All four of us are really a force to be reckoned with there.
Well, I wanted to say that we've got a lot of things to be grievously concerned about, and I have to hand it off to Jane for putting a lot of effort and trying to get one venue of this fight started, and it had to be started, and I'm glad that she did it, and she's a courageous person for doing that. There's a lot of things that I could update you with. One of the things, though, that I don't think that I have mentioned might have been some of the history, Jane, of what was leading up to this event. And if you go And Jane, we'll have to talk again in person, and I'll give you a lot more pertinent information and research. But it looks like to me, Jane, that this event was in the making and has been in the making for quite some time. We're talking not just months, but probably years. In the last few months, longer leading up to this event, happened to be something that was going on in the background. Now, this is a very minor thing in and of itself, but it is pointing a direction of where they were coming from and what they had anticipated way before it ever happened, and that's this. There was a game that was being developed, a computer game that was being developed that was supposed to be released in the later part of the year 2009, this year. And the computer game was to simulate a pandemic outbreak and how to manage and control it. Now, the computer game was called Coral Cross. Now, you can find that documented. If you go to the blog, my blog, Jane, you'll just type in on the search engine Coral Cross, you'll come up on the information. It was commissioned by none other for being made by the CDC.
Yeah.
Now, what happened was that the pandemic started before they were done, and they didn't finish in time. Now, however, completing it, it was meant to be released, the game, prior to the event so that people could understand. But I thought that would be quite timely because this was under development before we even had a Mexican swine flu event started. So that's just one of the many things that points to this leading up to quite an event. Now, we can go into that a little bit, but just a couple more things, and maybe then we can get into what more about the aspects of this flu itself. But there was a series of events at the CDC and NIH where, even starting back as far as President Reagan, and eventually it led up to President Bush, the last one, making five visits, unusually high number, to the NIH, and it resulted in an April of 2004, President Bush signing what was called the Biodefense for the 21st Century document. Now, this just wasn't any document. It was Homeland Security Presidential Directive oriented and is a plan for a response. Now, we always hear it being, so to speak, cloaked or its intent whitewashed with the fact that it had to be bioterrorism, when in fact after you get into the document you'll see that it says it will be used for any naturally occurring biological incident. So I thought that was real interesting. Now, when you get in the Google aspect of this and you Google it, you'll go to the White House and you'll see the documents missing. However, if you go to Texas A&M University's website and you'll Google for HSPD-10, the document has been archived there. So you can get it without having to give blood and check out with the Secret Service and all that. So there's some information for you.
Well, Jane, does that help you at all? Is this useful? Because the other side of the coin is that John Waterman is also very well versed in homeopathics, and there are remedies in homeopathology, from what I understand. I'm not even sure if I'm saying that right. But Jane, are you aware of those?
I'm sure John is much more able to describe these remedies than I am, and I'd love to hear them.
Okay.
Okay, well, let me kind of give you an idea about that. By the way, yesterday, late breaking news from Nature. Now, I don't know if you're all familiar with the publication Nature.
Yes, I
think
I actually wrote for it.
Okay. Well, there was that late breaking news. Now, on my blog, you'll find a downloadable PDF document. This is a pre-released research study. It wasn't supposed to, or at this point, it wasn't publishable. And so you'll see pre-published or not published. And so I acquired this document, and it's downloadable, by the way, Jane, on my blog, and you can get that. I don't know if Nature is going to publish. They say they have, but here's what they have found out. There is a doctor that's, he's in Japan, but he's also in the United States, that has just recently found out that the 1918 and the 2009 H1N1 has similarities that is causing problems with, here's how they discovered it. They took the antibodies from some very old people that were around when the 1918 pandemic occurred. Come to find out, antibodies actually recognize the current flu. I'll try and make it less as little technical as I can here. And so the current swine flu outbreak, the H1N1, was recognized by those antibodies. Now, in a certain way, you might think that's good, but that's not, because that means that it is becoming more apparent that we're on the path of what we had in the past called the 1918 pandemic, because this is the exact path that it followed. There's more on that from that site. I also have there an interview from Dr. Nyman with Flu Tracker. So there's a lot of, you know, stuff going on, but the body recognizes microbes through identifying them, and our immune system, after it's identified, will attack it. Now, how that occurs is by recognizing the outside cell structure of these microbes. Now, what ends up happening is that everything in the universe, everything that exists, that we have physical, even chalk, has a frequency. And all the elements on the chart, although not alive, have frequencies. So at the quantum level, there is still movement. There's frequencies means how fast things are spinning. And so when we have an item that we are exposed to, such as, say, calcium or oxygen or any element, the body recognizes it by not just because it has to interact chemically with our body, but it recognizes it by its frequency. Now, at the same time, microbes have frequencies. They have a common aggregated identifiable frequency. So a virus would have a certain frequency, a bacteria would have a certain frequency. And that is not, though, where Royal Rife began his work. But where I'm going is that homeopathics can mimic the identifying features that the body uses to, so to speak, train the body to be able to identify the microbe. Now, the problem with existing medicine today is that they want to attack, through the existing model, a specific type of virus. But when you begin to research this, and now this is not just common with European biological medicine, which, Jane, you'll find a lot of that more often expressed in Europe than you will here in the United States. although we both use Western models. It's not uncommon. So what happens is we've been able to use this thing called homeopathics that has no microbes in it to help teach the body how to get well. Now, that's just a real brief homeopathic explanation.
Okay, but Jane, haven't you been talking about the Spanish flu, and are we talking about the 1918? Is this the same flu, and basically that you feel this is the first stage we're in that is very much like the Spanish flu, Jane?
That's right. I mean, my understanding is that Jeffrey Taubenberger went and dug up the corpse of a victim of the Spanish flu that was preserved in the permafrost in Canada or Alaska, and reconstructed from the tissue that he extracted from the lung of this victim the genetic code or whatever of this Spanish flu. And he worked on reconstructing it, and my understanding is the swine flu is the kind of the first sort of version, the H1N1 novel version. I think they even published something about this, Jeffrey Taubenberger and the CDC, a few years ago. And the bird flu is the more lethal version of this Spanish flu. That's my understanding. So they have reconstructed it and set it out there, and it's going to follow the same pattern as the Spanish flu, which had a mild first wave and a more lethal second wave and third wave. And we haven't seen yet the second lethal wave.
And I'd have to agree, that's exactly how it's occurring and how it did occur. And there's one misunderstanding that Dr. And I hope I say his name right, is Kioka, has in his publication that's come out in Nature, has said, and I'll quote him, he says, "There is a misunderstanding about this virus." Now, that's this current swine flu virus, not the avian. And the professor of pathology and sciences of Medicine School of Veterinary Medicine and the leading authority on influenza says, "People think this pathogen may be similar to seasonal influenza. However, this study shows that is not the case. There is clear evidence this virus is different than seasonal influenza." That was what was published yesterday. So we're not talking about this being a normal flu that is having an effect in the normal way. And let me kind of give you just kind of symptom difference. Normal flu just affects the upper respiratory, the upper part of the respiratory system. This particular H1N1 swine flu affects the middle and lower parts of the lungs. So it's different, completely different. And that's why they've been having something Jane may have written about called a term's been coined for this, a cytokine storm, meaning the immune system has conflicting signals and can't repair and go on into recovery, and so the system begins to flood with fluids, and particularly since it's attacking the lungs fill up with fluid. That's the current flu. That's what we have now. But that's how she's right. That's how the avian flu in a more vicious way behaves. So that's what's about us now. And so we really don't, like the research doctor said in Wisconsin, we don't want to take lightly what we even have now, even though the mortality rate, which I've been tracking, has been bouncing around about a 0.5%. That the virulence, the amount of people that get infected with this, can then become more of a incubator for the next stage.
Okay, so what you're saying is that we're on the verge of, I guess, the second stage. Is that what you're both basically saying? Would you?
Yes, I would agree with Jane. Yeah, that's correct. And we're getting more and more and much more. I mean, I don't know how many more research articles and how much more information we have to have from just the pattern that we're seeing, besides the fact that we have a probably pretty good idea of what they're up to. That's a whole nother thing to talk about.
Well, Jane, I do want to give you a chance to add anything else that you might have to say on this subject, and we're probably going to go to break very quickly here. And in fact, we're there now. So when we return, Jane, if you could address maybe whatever questions you might have to Dr. Waterman or thoughts I want to say. Okay, we're back. This is Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan, Whistleblower Radio, Project Camelot. And we're on the air with Dr. John Waterman, and we're also on the air with Jane Burgermeister. Jane, are you there?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So at the end, right before the break, I was just suggesting that perhaps you could circle around and cover what you maybe feel hasn't been covered yet, and also utilize John, as our sort of resident medical expert, if that's useful.
Could I just address one point, which I think you, Bill and John, will kind of appreciate, and this is the issue about the solar flares, which might seem unconnected, but apparently there is a connection between what is happening with the sun's activity and the problem we're facing right now, and it's actually quite a hopeful and fascinating connection. But I'm sure you're aware that the sun is at the moment it's more active than it has been for a long time, and more quantities of solar energy are streaming down on the surface of the Earth because of the way our magnetosphere is decreasing. But it seems that this solar energy can destroy pathogens. So we're getting kind of help from the sun in a very amazing way. And yesterday I was emailing Patricia Jordan, who's a vet who's very knowledgeable about this subject, and she was listing to me all the viruses people like the CDC, who in the UN have developed and patented, from sort of swine flu to bird flu to horse flu, and just the whole spectrum, and how they've been putting out these particles, not just through into the atmosphere through vaccinations and aerosol vaccinations and whatever. And she was kind of feeling quite hopeless and saying, we have to pray for a miracle. And then of course I just said, well, maybe the sun will kind of sweep all of this away. And then she replied and said that is the case. Solar energy does have the power to destroy pathogens, and it's actually used in viral decontamination units to destroy pathogens. So isn't that an amazing coincidence that this sun is flaring up and sending so much solar energy towards us, and this is actually going to help us and cleanse our atmosphere of a lot of these pathogens.
Let me ask you, Jane, or perhaps even John, is this why vitamin D3 is a good idea? Because this is also a natural product of exposure to sunlight. But we've been told by a number of people that up to 5,000 international units of vitamin 3 is a very effective antiviral. We'd love to hear that.
You mean D3, right?
D3.
D is in dog, yes.
Uh-huh. D is in dog.
Are you familiar with that, John?
Yes. Actually, D3, it kind of can convey a different kind of supplement, because really what we're talking about is, you really wanted to say, shouldn't be called a vitamin, it should be called a hormone. Now, that's kind of it's probably the first time a lot of people have heard that, because that's what is provoked. D3 behaves in a fashion that would be hormonal, and then you're going to get further down the road and a lot faster. So, it's very effective in boosting the immune system. It's very effective in providing what has to be done. What we have to have, first of all, we have an issue. We have a swine flu issue. We're going to probably have more than that. And people need to be addressing this issue right now. There are several ways to do that. And there are several ways to boost the immune system. Some of them are more mechanical, like silver. When silver comes in contact with any microbial, it kills it on contact. It ruptures the membrane around the bug. And these are because of the electrical charge disrupting it and ripping that thing open. It's kind of like going up to a water balloon and poking it with a needle. So we have that kind of approach. We have things.
You know, I'm sorry, John. I want to interrupt one second here. I'm really sorry about this, but we've got a caller, I believe, calling in from Norway, and we wanted to allow that caller to come on the line here because they might have some very good information about the situation in Norway. Isn't that correct, Bill? Hello?
Area code 47 is from Norway. That's correct. It'd be quite interesting to hear what...
Okay, so I'm clicking on this caller here to see if it works. Hello, caller from Norway. Are you on the line?
I am on the line. I'm Liv calling from Norway.
Hi there. Go ahead.
You hear me, yeah. I just wanted to say that it seems to me that the information of mandatory vaccinations in Norway seems not to hold up. Now I have in front of me on the internet the last published authority health article. It was published the second of this month, yeah. And it says that 9.4 million doses of pandemic vaccines will arrive in Norway in the fall, and that this would suffice to vaccinate all Norwegians. It also says that it will still be necessary to make priorities of who to be first in line. It says to be offered, not mandatory. That doesn't mean that somebody doesn't plan to make it mandatory, but at least there is no information available today to support that decision already is made.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to make that correct.
All right, thank you very much. That's very useful information. I believe our information that we got from another Norwegian citizen was talking about some perhaps inside information about something happening in November. But I do understand what you're saying, and thank you very much for giving us that information.
Yeah.
Okay, Dr. Waterman, if you want to continue now with the possible other things that people could do to remedy the situation or to protect themselves.
Well, I would like to say, too, that the only reason that we haven't heard that we're going to be forced vaccinations at the national level is because they do not want to give the general public a heads up any sooner than they have to prior to when they know they're going to have vaccines ready. However, the Florida's Surgeon General has already announced that they are going to begin massive swine flu immunization and vaccinate, and that's in the Miami Herald on July 10th. So there has been announcements, and they're popping up now in the states all over that there is a march. They are moving forward, and we are going to be having to make decisions about what we're going to do. And so when we look at this, there are remedies. And I want to say for the folks in Europe in Norway and so forth, that there is a remedy from a company called Pekana, P-E-K-A-N-A, and they need to acquire from Pekana. Just ask the pharmacies over there. It's a little different than it is here. And they can acquire this over the counter in their pharmacies there, centralized pharmacies. And in Switzerland, Bill, you should be able to procure this too. A remedy for virus and influenza. And it is not needing to be specific to a kind of virus because these don't work in the same way a vaccine does. So, Pekana all over Europe. And certainly in Australia, the same remedy, I believe, is available. Now, I want to give the name before I get off and the other tangents of the other two distributor here in the United States is for the practitioners out there, because that's what you would have to be. It's called BioResource, and you can get on the internet and Google them, BioResource, all one word, and access that. The other companies are distributed by those people from Germany, and so we have three companies through BioResource that we can get remedies from, including that one I mentioned, which was Pekana, which is fairly prevalent and well-known in Europe. So for Ireland and the UK, Norway, Sweden, the Netherlands, Austria, Switzerland, that's the direction to go, and much easier to get the remedy. And you wouldn't have to pay all that expense for shipping from here. So, where did you want to go, Carrie? I'm kind of lost my direction there.
Well, I think that you're both basically talking about what are possible sort of remedies and things people can do to protect themselves. The changes in the sun, I think that was a fascinating piece of information. Jane, that you were talking about. And I have to say that we have a new whistleblower. His name is Pete Peterson, who has also been addressing what is called the information field, which is all around us, and how that affects the body and affects whether or not you decide to accept a virus into your body or not. So there are different ways of approaching the whole idea of viruses and pandemics, and there is a thought process that could actually open the door. In other words, negativity and a certain kind of a way of thinking. It's the same for all disease. And maybe you can address that, Dr. John Waterman, because that's something that we're really talking about. Although they may be putting viruses, and in the end, what we really have here is a war for consciousness.
A lot of people really may already be aware, but just to restate it, the sun's been in a record level quiet period. We happen to be at the low, the solar cycle low, but it has been and has set a record beyond anything had for quite some time about how quiet it has been. The other day, one of the first flares showed up, and now it's beginning to pull out of its solar minimum. And when it became apparent to me that we had this event occurring, the outbreak, that it was paralleling the low of the solar minimum. Now, it's interesting because we also have something that I think may have was just touched on, and that's the fact that we have chemtrails. And let's just talk about what does a chemtrail do. Well, they kind of duster and reflect a lot of the rays of the sun. So now, on top of not having the having the solar minimum, we've had the reflection of these rays with the chemtrails too. Now, I would have to tell you, in a biological way, what that does. Sun activates the body's immune system. 10 minutes a day in the sun, is a wonderful remedy. It used to be. The bad side of being in the sun in the wrong place at the wrong time is that the UV is damaging, but we need that D3 that Bill and you all were talking about, Jane was talking about. The D3 is very important to be produced for our immune system. So anyway, the options that we have are very real. They are really good answers, and I don't want people to spare it. So.
Okay, we're going to break. Thank you, Dr. Waterman and Jane Burgermeister. We'll be back right back after the break.
Hi, this is Bill Ryan with Terry Cassidy, and this is Project Camelot on Whistleblower Radio. We've been talking to Jane Burgermeister, and now we have Dr. John Waterman on the line. We're having a pretty interesting conversation that's going to all kinds of interesting things. We're into the final 8 minutes now. And, John, I wonder if I could ask you, first of all, and then I'd like to ask Jane the same question. For the benefit of maybe some people who are only just getting the word to tune into this show at the last minute and may not have heard what was said earlier, can you give a verbal bullet point list of self-defense strategies to handle this threat if it is real? What should people do and what should they not do? Do you think we can summarize that in 60 seconds? And I'll ask Jane the same question.
Okay. The threat that we have right now with swine flu is real there, and we have the one coming over the horizon. This treat, let me give it, break it into three quick points, and this will be appropriate for both. First category, have some kind of remedy, and I would recommend silver. The nano silver is excellent. That can kill the microbes on contact, but that can't be just alone. Second, you want to be able to stop this cascading inflammatory response that is deadly, that it can cause even swine flu to kill people. Now, to keep that inflammation from happening, I would get curcumin for the inflammation, and definitely omega-3, which is fish oils. I would be taking 800 a day, a minimum 1,200 milligrams of fish oils, and let those remedies begin to bring the inflammatory response down, which will be occurring more aggressively if it was avian and less aggressively, but exists with the swine flu. Those are two good bullet points, and I would be on those. The third, very, very important, is we must train our body to know how to recognize the microbes. And we can use that both preventatively and during acute viral infection, whether it be swine flu, normal flu, or even avian. And so there is a protocol for that too, and PECANA is part of that. So that is, all three of these should be available from wherever the people are in the world listening on the show. That's my.
Is there anything you can say, John, about Jim Humble's MMS, Miracle Mineral Supplement? We have a lot of people who've been following our work and who have reported some remarkable successes with that. And at the same time, we know that there's been some criticism too. Can you briefly say your personal view on that? And then I'd love to ask Jane to finish off the show with her own political perspective on this, as it were. Thank you.
Bill, I caught part of that. I think you were talking about mineral supplement, MS. Is that correct?
I was talking about MMS, Jim Humble's Miracle Mineral Supplement.
Okay.
Chlorine dioxide.
Okay. What we're talking about basically is that it helps move the environment from acidic to alkaline, which is not compatible with virus and bacteria. That is infected or pathogenic. Good bacteria we want, like, for example, in our intestines. And, yes, so that's kind of my quick answer. It helps the milieu. It helps the body. And when we get well, what we're made of, vitamins and enzymes are the bricklayers. Minerals are the bricks. We got to have both.
Okay, Jane, could we move on to Jane? Jane, I understand that really your approach is in a major way really political.
No, it's actually legal. Can I just make it clear that
sure.
the laws are in place to compel people to take the injection? That means they will take the doxix directly into their bloodstream. And my approach is to try and put legal blocks in place to prevent vaccine companies and governments compelling people to take the vaccine in the autumn when the emergency is declared and when people may not have a choice in taking these vaccinations.
Okay. So is there something else that you would advise people to do, Jane, from your point of view, in terms of how to approach the legality of the situation, other than the way you've done so to this point?
There are many options. You can, for example, apply for an injunction, which means that courts will prohibit the companies from distributing the vaccinations on the grounds that they're dangerous. Or you can contact your country's medical authority and apply to ask them to have companies like Baxter's license withdrawn so they cannot distribute the vaccination.
Okay. John Waterman, do you have a response to this approach? Because I certainly don't know if what we're sort of kind of on the verge of sort of a major rollout of an Illuminati game plan. I'm not sure that the legal approach is gonna really be effective.
I think we have to do both, Carrie. I want to give her a site that is very important. Jane, it's jurisdictionary.com. This is a grassroots effort of injunctions being filed domestically in the United States through the process of the state courts to actually stop the vaccine from being distributed. We have to fight both fronts. We have to try and get it stopped. We have to try and defend ourselves, because if a dart gets through the screen door and we get hit, we want to be protected. And so,
okay, I think that's a very good point. Jane, we only have, like 2 minutes left, but I would love to give you, space here if there's anything else you want to add to talk to the people out there.
Well, basically, I just encourage people to follow John's excellent advice and at the same time to be aware that there is legislation in place which can compel people in autumn to take a vaccination, and that no amount of immune or supplements are going to stop you getting sick as a result of that. So please also explore in the option of injunctions, suing the companies, whatever legal options are available to you to stop these vaccinations being distributed in autumn.
Okay, thank you very much, both of you, Jane Burgermeister and Dr. John Waterman. We're very pleased to have you on the show. We would love to have you back in the near future. I think your information is vital.
Jane, thank you. You're a hero. This is Bill Ryan at Whistleblower Radio. We'll talk to you soon.